Good morning, Alan, and welcome to our studio.
Thank you.
On Sunday, you were celebrating 30 years of Our World Today, which is a monthly magazine.
Yes.
So how it was, since I was not there?
The celebration itself?
Yeah.
It was interesting. The coming together was in two parts. The first part, we were talking about what is Our World Today, how we reached 30th. And I read out some extracts from old Our World Todays and asked people to guess the dates. And most people were quite surprised that we'd written things 30 years ago that were still very, very relevant. The second part was exploring our communication culture in Oroville today, trying to improve it or get ideas about how we could enrich it.
Mm-hmm.
I found the discussion a little bit subdued.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was partly because we're just not used to meeting like that anymore.
The question is, do we have a culture to communicate?
Well, it's a good question. I suppose that was the unspoken question itself. Mm-hmm. Because I think we've got used to... Alain Bernard was there, and he remembers the very early meetings of Oroville, when people perched in the old post office in Kulapalu, on shelves and things like that. Very small, uncomfortable room, and he said... They were the best meetings we ever had.
But there was a community of 100 to much 300.
Smaller.
It was, everyone were coming to the meetings and
that's
the things
right.
were completely
and
different.
And they were
no?
kind of united by an external threat, which was the society. We don't have that in the way, same way now. And I think what happened was our general meetings deteriorated in the 1980s, became quite, some people became quite aggressive and dogmatic about the opinions that they held. And a lot of people stopped going.
Yeah,
and
true.
Even people went, they kind of felt sick afterwards. And so I think there was a kind of reaction to that. I think today we have facilitated meetings. It's much more controlled. So the control is much more there today.
Yeah, but, do the things come out?
Well, this is the question.
Yeah.
There's a feeling that actually,
why do we have political
while it's
attitude?
Much more controlled and maybe a little bit more less violent, people can't express themselves openly any longer. So I think that came out on Sunday to a certain extent. Mm. People are kind of hungry for a space where they can express themselves freely. And we don't feel we have it at present. Oronet is not that space.
It's censored.
Yeah, we don't really have a space like that. But there's another challenge, which is it just a matter of free expression or free expression in the context of our ideals? And that's another challenge, because if we just express ourselves freely... Sometimes we actually push ourselves apart. So that was a question I put at the very end. Can we express ourselves in a very open way about our feelings about Oroville at present or even about each other, but in a way that actually promotes the ideals of Oroville rather than drives us further apart?
I mean, the line people are forgetting that we are going through the yoga of transformation.
Yes.
Yeah? And in that path, usually... We do, and I've seen it here around, many hit the bottom, the ugliest parts, the ego so inflated, so it's, then when do you stand? Are you even aware of this and how to move on? To, let's say, transcend out of diving totally into the abyss and come up, no?
Yeah.
And I think it's always underlying the question of power and the fear. Because I've seen and I've been asking around and so many said, oh, I'm just a newcomer. I cannot express what I want. So it's like what happened in 50 years from a family, like a community which was a family, all of a sudden turned into something which has a rigid bureaucracy. And then, of course, it's a power and it's like it's a fear.
Yeah.
So that's probably does, let's say, design the way we communicate. No?
Yeah, I think, well, even obviously for Oroville today, because we're going, many of our copies go outside Oroville, and they go to government offices and they go to embassies.
Well,
so
that's another topic.
Clearly,
we
have to inform
the
people, but we obviously, we exercise quite a lot of self-censorship in terms of how we can, what we can talk about and how we can talk about it.
Yeah. So how do we stand in that in our world today?
How do we do it?
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult. Actually, we have three different readerships. We have people who know Oroville, like the AVI centres outside.
Mm-hmm.
So they already know Oroville and very supportive. We have the government offices and embassies who have very little knowledge. And we have the Orovillians themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We came up basically for the AVI centres in 1988. They were not getting enough regular news about Oroville International Centres. They were not getting regular news about what was happening. So that was basically our prime readership. But we discovered after a few years that Orovillians were reading us to find out what was happening here.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a comment upon our communication culture. So it's very difficult. You have three very different readerships.
Mm-hmm.
The Orovillians know a lot. The AVI people know a middle ground, and then the government people know nothing very often.
Well, I think you're forgetting also about, or maybe that's what we're facing, is also the fourth readership or listenerships. Those are the people who are outside.
The general readership.
And they might be interesting to explore Oroville,
yes.
Or they just accidentally stumble upon it, yeah?
Sure.
And that's another perspective in which also you, as you are facing your censorship, I'm also having myself censorship how I want to be portrayed, or when something happened, how we should portray it outside, that you don't detriment certain actions or stuff like
but
that.
But it's a very interesting question, because we never wanted to be a PR magazine. We always resisted that. And actually, increasingly, we've been willing over the years to ask difficult questions of Oroville, because we want to also be part of the Oroville process, not just to report on what's happening, but maybe to initiate processes here. And we found interesting that some of the people who've come to Oroville, through Oroville Today, reading it outside, have come because they think there's a degree of honesty in what we're expressing in Oroville, rather than it just being a shiny publication that only looks at the nice things about Oroville.
No, I was not thinking really about that, but it's even if you have a family, yeah?
Yeah.
And then somebody asks you, how is your family? You're not going to talk about underlying questions or discussions, you know, the struggles you're dealing with. But you will say, okay, my family functions so and so, and we have this and this process is how we decide. You're not going to say, okay, you see, but the last child, he's still stubborn and resisting. It is not about dishonesty or shiny PR. It's about, let's say, selecting or choosing how you want to be seen.
Mm. I think
we had a different feedback, because many people who get across or came through the radio or asked for volunteerships, they were telling us, oh, since we are listening to the radio, we see in reality how it is. Because, for example, we don't really edit the general meetings. We put them up on display as they are.
Mm.
Even if they are fights, we don't cut them. We don't. It's off the cuffs.
Mm.
I mean, for the fact that, you know, each has a right to make his own opinion, what was going on at the point. And it's also for the Orovillians, so they can know. Mm. If I do just a selection of the highlights, you won't get it.
Mm.
And the listeners were saying exactly that. Now we see that it's actually communities anywhere else, but you are striving towards something. Yeah?
I think it's important. I mean, in a sense, what you're saying is you present the raw material.
Mm.
You don't try and edit it. And that's one. But that's an important component of information. I think what we try and do in Oroville Today is try and provide context.
Mm.
So for if somebody's expressing themselves in a certain way, rather than just actually quoting that, we try and say, well, where is this coming from? Mm. What are the kind of, and what are the pressures? What are the questions? What are the challenges that we have in Oroville?
Mm.
That we arrive at this particular point, or this is why this particular opinion is being expressed of this. And then to try and leave the reader to make up their own mind. We try not, because when we first came out, there was a periodical, a French periodical, La Revue Orovillienne, the Oroville Review, which at that time was basically run by an editorial team who were very critical of Oroville. So they came out every few months, and almost every time they had long quotes of Mother about how we should be, and long critical articles about Oroville. And we actually reacted against that. We thought, we're not going to be a newspaper like that. which is going to tell Aurevillians how they should behave or where they're going wrong. And that's what we call the Aureville today.
But what you could achieve, I mean, you could write the critics, but then you ask yourself, what do you achieve with that? The criticizing somebody is like you're just entering the space to put more hatred or, you know, like this kind of fire, and it's not helping in anyhow.
They obviously thought they could reposition Aureville or put them on the right track by doing that. But it just created a reaction. People couldn't listen to it any longer. So communication was not happening, obviously.
No, but each of us is also on its own path. And it's also probably the stage you are upon. Personally, I can see also a lot of unconsciousness, so to speak, and I'm wondering what are they doing. But it's like you have to remember, okay, it's the path somebody's on. So you can be a little bit more tolerant. And per se, I don't write critics. I don't see any constructive point in that. I can put it on display and that's it, yeah? Where it can go deeper, it's the personal interviews. Yeah. You can sometimes actually beautiful things can do be expressed, But in recording our general meetings, I don't see a point. You record the general meetings and you offer this as it is.
I think that the problem then is the terms of communication is how people interpret what they hear. If you don't know Aureville, for example, and you're listening to a general meeting, depending on the meeting, of course, it can be something totally undecipherable, or it can be something very interesting if you have an interesting presentation or whatever. But it's almost as if you need another text or program which explains why this is happening at this moment. Because that doesn't always come out in the general meetings.
No, it doesn't. But you also forget, and I witnessed the thing. The funny thing was, like, I recorded it, and, you know, after that, a person will claim, oh, that and that was said there. And the other one will say, no, it was said so and so and so. And if I would do the highlights, one or the other might prevail.
Yeah.
But since I didn't, when they were listening, I said, oh, it was this and it was also that one. It's not, you know, it's each of us does hear what he or she wants to hear. So it's we are selecting by ourselves what happened on that general meeting. Yeah.
This is the complexity of communicating Aureville, no? It's such a complex...
It's also complexity of
our
minds,
always simplifying. No? Whatever you do, if you write something or whatever, it's a simplification of what's there. And it, you know, this sense of communication, you say something, but you have to think about how will it be received. What about somebody who has no or very little knowledge of Aureville? What does this mean to them? And in a short article, you just can't do that. You can't provide all that. So you just have to trust that there's something there that will communicate at another level, not at a kind of mental, factual level, but they'll touch something within the spirit of what you're saying. That makes sense to them.
The language itself has got its own powers, yeah? And it does create the image. So if the selection of words, especially your written form, so somebody see it, I believe you can do it, that it doesn't go really off.
We have always been an English language. Actually, for a very short time, there was a French translation of Aureville Today, but then it stopped. Two people here were translating. So it's always been in English. So that's another question mark. To what extent we can communicate with people for whom English is not their first language.
And that's a problem we have in community itself, because when somebody hears something, it does translate it literally, maybe, with the Google Translator, so to speak, but anyhow in the head, and usually something else comes out. Not what you are trying to say, but it's like the way somebody hears it. And I've seen it that many times that is also a cause of disputes and arguing, because the person, the other party, didn't understand what somebody's trying to say, no?
We offered simultaneous translation in French and Tamil at our Sunday meeting. And only one person took it up, one French person. But there were not many Tamil people there. And I'm wondering if this is partly the problem that, it's a linguistic thing that many people are not comfortable, because English is the lingua franca of our community, whether we like it or not. So there are people who are not comfortable. But it's not just that, it's the fact that very often, if it's not your native tongue, there are things you cannot express, you can only express in your native language.
That's a fact.
So we've been very weak, I think, on providing things like simultaneous translation or even translations of important documents. I mean, the people in the town hall are trying very hard. I know the French and whatever, but it's still very much a kind of Anglo-Saxon culture we're talking about here in terms of communication.
I think that's the where the problem lies, yeah, because also the, you know, right now we have also, and this afternoon it's a clearance panel meeting, yeah?
Yes.
So that's underlying because they feel discriminated.
Yeah, yeah.
However we turn it, they do feel discriminated.
Yeah, yeah. And this sense that every language can express certain things and not others, you know. And this is where the unconscious discrimination takes place as well, you know, in the sense that because we use English as our lingua franca, we have this assumption that the English or the Anglo-Saxon manner of thought is something that everybody shares. But it's clearly not.
No.
And
the Tamil culture is thousands and thousands years older than Anglo-Saxon culture. Yeah. So they also feel like kind of ridiculous, which I can understand.
You know,
somebody whose culture is much younger than ours is trying to, they have a feeling that, we, you know, the Anglo-Saxon is trying to dominate.
Mm.
It might not be per se, but still.
Mm. So I think that's why, you know, for Oracle today or any English thing, we have to have a lot of humility and realize that we're communicating a very small slice of something. You know, there are many other points of view and perceptions in the community. And I'm hoping in time there will be, for example, a Tamil magazine. I mean, there is a Tamil magazine, but that's simply a kind of cultural one. But something that expresses the point of view more fully of the Tamil people here, and maybe the French as well. I was told by somebody, a French-speaking person, a few years back, that if French had become the lingua franca of Oroville, it would be a very different place. And it's an interesting comment because, of course, the French culture also has a very particular perspective upon. So a French Oroville today would probably focus upon quite different things and would present it in a very, very different way. And it wouldn't be right or wrong. It would just be another. And I think this is the real issue for people outside, that how to keep reminding people that when we write an article, it's just one perspective, one slice. It's not definitive.
No, of course not.
But by putting something into words, you create a kind of definitive version just by that.
Finding ways, or even,
you can do it in a general meeting because you'll get contradictory views and whatever, very often. But we don't always have the space and the time to represent all the different views on any particular topic. So I think that's a real issue for us.
What is the policy? How do you choose what you're going to write about? Reflecting on the events?
We reflect on, Carl. We sit around at the beginning of every month. We sit as a very small team at present.
How many?
Actually, at present, only three of us.
Mm-hmm.
Carol, myself, and Manas. But we have people coming in, friends of ours who come in and visiting, like Leslie at present. And then we look at basically, what is there something coming up in the next month that we clearly have to cover? Or are there things which have been simmering, continuing on, which we need to give updates on? Like, for example, the highway is an obvious one at present. And then we also look at this idea of, are there untouched aspects of Oroville? Things that we haven't really looked at for some time.
Like?
Well, it's, you know, we try to do this more through profiles. We try regularly have one person, very often who is not particularly well known in the community. And we try and actually, we go and interview them. They talk about what they're doing, their life, how they came to Oroville, how they perceive Oroville at present. And this is very popular with readers outside because they feel they touch another non-institutional part of Oroville.
It's a human touch, no?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And sometimes stories emerge out of that we follow up, you know.
Okay.
But we're aware there are areas that we can't touch. We can't touch the kind of the discrimination thing.
We can't
touch
hot
political. Exactly. Which is frustrating at times because you can have to say something, but you know there's a whole backstory to it that you can't even go into. In fact, you know, the backstory very often with anything in Oroville, when you get a blockage in anything, architecture or economy or governance, it comes down to human issues, basically, very, very often. Individuals who find it difficult to work with others. Now, we're not going to say that. We're not going to focus upon who it was and whatever. But it's that kind of X ingredient that's often there that we can't really talk about.
Yeah, but still determines. It does define. And I found it, since by the numbers we are a little bit more than 2,500 of population, And as such, we are still a village. And the gossip is actually a really convenient mode of conversation, yeah? It's actually destructive. I found it really destructive, but it's fastest, and it's at least it's telling you where it's bubbling something, no? Unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, we have kind of the institutions of a township to a certain extent, but we have the mentality of a village. And I think that's one of the problems, actually, you know.
To me, it was fascinating when I came, they asked for the letters of recommendations, yeah? Then I asked somebody, so how do you think that it is? And they told me, that's a social network. I said, like, but how you see me or how the other person see me, that is your gossip about me. Mm. It does tell you or the entry service who I really I am and what I'm striving for.
Right.
I found it a little bit...
No, it's true. Yeah.
Huh? This is like, and you dare to say that it's a social network? It's not. It's a gossiping. And it does happen. We've seen it that somebody might be rejected on somebody's personal opinion or likings or disliking. On the other hand, we see people coming in because somebody favors somebody, and it gives a shiny recommendation. But who are we to judge?
Yeah, it's a very tricky thing. I agree absolutely, Miriam, with that. Because we don't have the kind of institutional safeguards that you have, say, in the outside world. You know, something like that, for example, you'd have a number of people you'd have to speak to. They'd have to go through a certain process. But the fact that we don't have them, the other side of that is there's actually more flexibility in our structures here. There's a lot of injustice because we don't have those institutions. We don't have court of law, we don't have police, we don't have all these things. So some people feel very hurt sometimes by something that's been done and they have no recourse. But the other side of that is we have the capacity actually to move faster.
Yes, true.
Develop. And it's a very fine balance, you know. We sometimes, on the one hand, sometimes people are given too much freedom and they take the wrong path there. But on the other hand, you can see it's actually a grace that we don't have. People complain now it's much more bureaucratic in Oriv, and I think it is than it used to be.
Yeah, it is.
Much, much more so. But still, there is that capacity to change, to modify, and whatever.
Yeah, we keep changing
that
the rules.
That you don't have in...
No, certain things go definitely faster because the way we function.
Yeah, yeah.
But as you said, sometimes it does injustice, or sometimes the bullying process, it takes place, and it's actually... they feel like they have a right to do it for some reason. I still didn't understand, but it also discrimination rights, and that's one of the reasons why in general meeting we see the same faces.
Yes,
and maybe sometimes somebody who wants to oppose, but that's about it. No,
It came up on Sunday actually, the feeling that people were not going any longer because they were too predictable. The general meetings, there would be a half-hour PowerPoint presentation and then somebody would get up and explain the PowerPoint, and then it would be a very short segment for discussion and everybody would go home.
But it's always governed by the dinner.
It's a governor. So it's a kind of feeling that the whole thing is a bit pre-cooked and controlled, and there's a feeling that people don't, you know, the people who are presenting don't really want a full and open discussion. They want basically people to feel... to get an assent to what they want to do. And if you feel that, then you're not going to, you don't feel you're going to
be involved. Why should you waste your time?
Yeah.
I mean, I can understand that. As I can, I was recording the general meetings last 2-3 years. I'm not recording anymore because we have plenty of volunteers. But before I was recording, I had this feeling always like changes were happening and there was a feeling, let's move forward and let's do something else. But before you achieve that point, what it could be different or what should we do? It was, it's a dinner time, we'll do it in 2 weeks.
Right.
And that 2 weeks never happened.
No,
it was just like, this summer I had an opportunity to talk with Amrit, and he explained it really beautiful, what's happening really. He said the Mother's Grace and the energy which flows, most of the Orivillians don't know what to do with it. They know how to incorporate it in the bodies and how to channel it to really do the work. And then those things happen. You feel the urge, you should do something and you're enthusiastic. But before that is coming to a climax, it's dispersed.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Yeah. It's also because I think with that energy, people want to channel it and they use the mind to channel it. So they come up with projects or whatever. And as soon as you try and challenge it, you've lost it. You know?
Yeah, definitely.
I think sort of for me, Oriville it's like there are two kind of independent worlds running here, you know. On the one hand, there is the world of our organization and groups, which are desperately trying to come up with to put frameworks around things. And then there is actually the real world of Oroville, the developing world, which is chaotic. But it also has an underlying purpose. And I think when things work in Oroville, consciously or unconsciously, they've managed to kind of synchronize with that other energy. And when they don't, we're using our minds. Yeah. We think, why does it not work? Because we've made all the reasonable things. We've set
everything. Endless of projects which were just
exactly it doesn't
laying
matter.
There and, you know, on the shelves or just starting somewhere, even the foundation stones. But when that doesn't come, it's true. It's also like we are working something, but all the time, I'm working something.
Yeah.
I have a feeling the work which I'm doing is actually not what I'm doing, but it's the other.
Yeah,
they call it yoga of transformation, but it's keep going on, and it depends on so many other things, and it has no relations really to the work itself, or maybe partially because you are coming in contact with the people. But still, I found it that the other work much more important than what we are really doing, the outside structure. Yeah,
yeah,
it has nothing to do with the mind. Yeah. It's actually something something like, what's going on? I don't understand, and I don't need to. No?
Yeah,
do I? I don't need to understand really. Yeah. It's just.
I think that's true of Oroville today as well. I think for me, the actual final product every month is the least important part.
Yeah.
I think when you're talking to somebody, say interviewing somebody over many hours, you create a relationship.
That's basic.
And if it's a really interesting interview, you learn a lot as an interviewer. But the person you're interviewing learns a lot as well, just by having to articulate and think. And there's a certain kind of energy, you know, a kind of transformative energy. And if you can get that somehow into print, and it's very difficult to capture, then when somebody else reads that, maybe that passes on.
Mm.
And maybe that's one way in which Oroville is working.
Even if it's not obvious, it's still going on. Mm. And that's the beauty of it.
Mm.
See, for years it was puzzling me that tremendous energy which is exchanged on the concert between the audience and the performer. Yeah?
Yeah.
And when you listen to it, you cannot hear that.
Yeah.
You cannot get it.
Mm.
But you know it was there because you were there at the point.
Mm.
And that's also, that's what is that uncaptured thing.
Yes.
It's, I think that is what's governs us in down the line, no?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so that's the most frustrating thing for a journalist. You know, always that other thing, you're almost always going to miss it. You're not going to be able to capture it.
It doesn't happen always, yeah? You have to admit it also, that you can just hope that it will happen, but it doesn't happen always.
Mm.
But it's tremendous energy is flowing through everything, and it's how it's expressed, through whom and through what, and how. To me, it's really fascinating.
Mm, mm. I think it's to keep that sense of the unexpected. The thing that what Mother talked about is truth is new every moment, you know.
Mm.
And but of course, institutionally, we always want to keep the status quo at some level. So
it's just a mental level.
How does one keep that, you know? And there are people here one can speak to, and you really feel it. They're in contact with that other energy. And there are others who really, I mean, I'm not putting them down at all, but you feel that they're somehow, they've accepted the frame and they're giving you the framework. And it's very interesting. When I transcribe an interview, I'm not listening just to the word. I get really an insight into that individual's mind and personality and whatever.
Mm.
And there are some interviews which almost, because I always have to edit it, and they almost write themselves. And there are others which are almost impossible to get down. And it's not because the person's incoherent. It's just somehow there's some link missing inside them in terms of energetic link or whatever. I never tell this to people, but it's just an interesting.
No, I know. I know what you're talking about. And it's like, if it happens, sometimes it doesn't happen. So it's also fine. It's like really bother with it anymore. Mm. I'm not worried about it. But I know that the moment when it happens, it's really nice.
Mm.
And it's okay. And if somebody else can hear it, it's also fine. If people don't hear it, it's also fine.
Yeah.
You see, there's like, for example, somebody tell you the truth or like said a sentence when you're 5 years old and the same sentence when you're 15. And that sentence is maybe dormant.
Mm.
Dormant in you somehow, some kind of truth, for example. Yeah. And then when you're like 25 or 30, it hits you. Okay, that is that. You know, it's like, are you able to hear it?
Mm.
And sometimes we are not, no?
Mm.
It's fine. How long have you been working for Oroville today?
30 years.
You've been there from the beginning?
Carol and myself were there from the beginning.
Hmm.
And interesting, quite a lot of the team are still in Oroville. We introduced quite a number of them on Sunday, and they had memories of the beginnings of Oroville. But yeah. But over the years, I mean, we've just brought out a new compilation of the last 12 years. I made a list of people who had written articles, and it was, I think, over 100 people. So they come and go, you know, if somebody writes something once every 3 months or whatever. So we've had this core team, and then we've had this larger team of people who've been willing to write.
They still participate, yeah. And I think lately, as looking by the names, you also accommodated the internships of volunteers?
Yes, yes, we have. Yeah. Or people who are joining Oroville. And that's always interesting, because on one hand, they lack a certain knowledge, but they bring in a perspective, an outside perspective, and sometimes they see things we don't. Because we're so used to the way we do things here. They ask questions, which are really interesting to...
Or they give a comment, which you like,
give a comment.
But you have a point, no?
Yeah.
It's true, when you are here, you start forgetting the things. And outside there, you can see it afresh and put it on display for you.
And it's nice for a newcomer, an outsider, because Oroville today is a bit of an entree. Most people are happy to speak to us, you know. And so it's a unique way for them to get to know the community. Yeah, they go out and do an article, and they might meet three people. So I think the safety factor is also interesting about Oroville today, because if we do an interview, unlike a normal newspaper, we will make an edited version, and then we show it back to the interviewee.
To authorize it, yeah.
So they actually have the possibility to change it or add things in.
Yeah, but that's a journalistic code of conduct.
Well, normally in general, newspapers outside, they will come, they'll report. You won't get any input. You won't get any input back into
If it's
that.
An interview, you have to ask for authorization.
Possibly.
At least I was in university, and that was the basic thing which they drill in our heads. You have to ask for authorization.
But fair enough, there's a kind of trade-off there, because on the one hand, you build trust in the individual and in the community. They can trust you. You're not going to come and write something. On the other hand, sometimes you lose a little bit of an edge, you know, where people can say very interesting things in an interview, but when they see it in print... they suddenly get a bit worried, either from their own ego point of view, or they don't want to create ructions in the community, so they either take it out completely, a comment, or they water it down. So we lose a little bit of that edge sometimes, but we cannot operate as a community newspaper if we don't give people the chance to.
No, it's the trust is still, I think, is important, and I've been also part of your integrality. You cannot... Otherwise, you're just a trashy gossiper.
Yeah, exactly. We're a rag. We're a
yellow pages.
Yellow tabloid magazine that's just...
I think we're striving for much more here, not for just that, no.
Yeah, just true.
And all those 30 years, how long have you been in Oroville, though?
I came in 79.
So a little bit more.
Yeah. And... I was never a journalist before. I don't even like the term journalist at all. I used to be a lecturer, suppose I was involved in communication before, but I never had any background in newspapers like this.
And why did you start it?
This particular newspaper started because of the Oroville International Centres. They asked us.
So to report back.
Carol was a member of the Oroville International for a long time. And he joined Oroville, I think, in 1986, but he kept a strong contact with the centres. So one year he was out, and I think it was in Germany, he went to one of their meetings, and it came through very strongly. We lack good, regular information about Oroville. And in those days, it was pre-internet, you see. People were going to the centres to find out about Oroville. They were considering coming here, or they just wanted to write an article. So the centres were totally dependent upon what we could provide. And they were getting very little information.
Well, now it's internet, so you can get whatever.
Now it's very, very different, of course. Yeah. But that's how we started.
Anything else?
I think it's enough.
The room is getting crowded. Thank you so much for coming.
Okay, thank you very much.
We'll see what happens next in the next 10 years, 20 years.